We are at the height of the growing season, and sometimes it can be hard for gardeners to keep up. This hour, we'll try to keep up with demand in the yard and garden. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, and ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran will be here. We'll take on the challenge of keeping up with a summer garden, make a to-do list, and, of course, answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Call 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
And Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And, of course, we are at the height of the summer growing season. Things are growing very fast, including weeds. So we're going to focus on summer garden tasks right now. But first, let's talk about nomenclature, because Richard tells me, Aaron, that you don't like the word chores.
No, I won't call it chores. Gardening's not a chore.
It's a task, right?
It's a task.
All right. Right. And task has a more positive connotation for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. We'll make it a to-do item.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's make our to-do list. And of course, I mean, right now, weeds are growing like crazy. Is that kind of the number one thing on the list, just to try to keep on top of those weeds?
It ties for number one. There's kind of two things on my list for number one. Weeding is certainly one of them. And this time of year, just like the rest of our plants, the plants we don't want in our garden are growing like gangbusters too. And staying on top of the weeding makes a big difference. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to also, if you have a bare area in your perennial border or somewhere, is to make sure that you get that ground covered. Bare ground is where weeds have the easiest time getting started. So a little bit of mulch goes a long way there. Getting in there and pulling out weeds when you see them. You don't have to, you know, my approach to weeding is I don't have to get every tiny little seedling. I'm going to get the stuff that looks big, that's looking terrible before it goes to seed or before it flowers, which is really important. And you can do it with a hoe. You can do it with your hand. You can, you know, however you get it done, just get it done.
Do you have any tips for efficiency? Because some people seem to be really incredible efficient weeders, and then there's me. So is there a way to make that a better process?
You know, it depends on where you're at in your garden. You know, if you have a relatively new garden where the plants are still fairly spaced out, there's a lot of soil that's exposed, there's a lot of sunlight that hits the ground, you're going to have more weeding than if your perennial border is established, the plants are touching, they're shading out the ground and preventing things from seeding in as well. And so part of it, I think a big part of it gets influenced by that.
All right. Now, what's the other thing that ties for first place on your list?
Watering. Watering this time of year, there's a lot of water. And, you know, some of us have been fairly dry. Ideally, our gardens get an inch of water a week, whether it's provided by Mother Nature or by you. And in particular, there are certain things like your vegetable garden, like any annuals, especially those in containers or hanging baskets, and anything that's been newly planted that really needs to be watched after, especially with the forecast that we see for next week. With the warm, dry weather, making sure that those plants get adequate water is probably the biggest chore I think both Richard and I have been working on the last several weeks.
Now, when we have a rain shower, how much rain does it take to make it so you don't need to water? Because I think a lot of us feel very complacent. Oh, it rained. I don't need to worry about that.
You know, you'll want to measure it, and an inch, if you get an inch of rain during the week, then you're probably okay. It's not as simple as just saying, you know, a very straightforward formula, because there's a lot of factors that play into it. Temperature will play a role in it. What kind of plant it is that you're dealing with will play a role in it. Our shrubs and perennials don't need as much water as our vegetable gardens or our annuals do. So it's not as straightforward as I wish it could be. But the general rule is if you get an inch of water that week, you're probably okay. Now, if it comes down in like 20 minutes, that whole inch, then that's probably not as useful as if you had a couple of showers throughout the week, too. So you got to keep that in mind as well.
All right. Well, what else is on your to-do list?
Well, I have some, you know, deadheading is important for a lot of perennials. Our roses should be still be deadheading. A lot of the roses will rebloom if we deadhead. And cutting back some of our perennials, things like my catmint are all floppy and sprawled out right now. A lot of salvia looks like that too. So cutting that back by about a half, it will kind of resprout and probably rebloom for you. So that'll be really nice. Now is the time to divide bearded iris as well, if you wanted to move or divide any of those plants. This is a great time of year to prune the suckers off of the bottom of your crabapple tree or any other tree that has that unwanted growth at the base, because at this point, they're not likely to grow back. If you prune them back in the spring, it's almost like a dare for them to come back stronger and more. But this time of year, they're basically done with all that growth. So if you cut them off, you got that chore done for the rest of the season. And that one is kind of a chore. I don't love doing that.
All right. Well, let's return to deadheading for just a moment, because deadheading is cosmetic in some ways, just kind of cleaning things up. But why would deadheading influence whether something blooms again?
Well, you know, there are many plants out there, their whole purpose is to set seed. And if you cut the flower off, they don't set seed. They can put energy into producing another round of flowers for you. And certainly deadheading also cleans up the plant, produces more opportunity for the plant to branch and produce more flower buds. So there's a lot of that plays into that. Also for deadheading, you know, if you have plants that readily self-sow, deadheading is really beneficial. I think of my garden phlox this way. It's a nice perennial to have around, but if I don't deadhead, it is everywhere the next year. Purple coneflowers this way too. And maybe that's okay in your garden, but if it's not, deadheading plays a big role in helping prevent that.
All right. Anything else we've missed on that list?
Oh, gosh, what else is on my list this time of year? Certainly harvesting in the vegetable garden has started. You've probably already started your beans. You've probably already started, if you had a really nice early round of sweet corn, you've probably started harvesting that. I'm getting my first tomatoes, especially the cherry-type tomatoes are coming on now. So harvesting is big. And keeping up on harvesting is important for certain crops like beans, because you don't want them to get too big. They just get seedy and not as tasty. Things like summer squash, it's really important, because those zucchini, they just pop up out of nowhere. In like 3 days, you have something that comes from like the size of a small water bottle all the way up to like the size of a football, and you don't know where it came from unless you're out there on a regular basis.
Now, I know
harvesting.
People want to avoid harvesting too early, but at this time of year, especially if you have some of those crops, you really need to be out there at least every day, right?
Yeah, or every other day, especially for things like zucchini and summer squash and beans, because if you let them on the plant too long, they're not as tasty, and you miss the opportunity to harvest the best product.
All right. Bigger is not always better.
It isn't. It isn't.
All right. Anything else we should be thinking about?
Well, I think the other big thing is making sure that you're scouting and looking for pest and disease issues, too. The hot weather is great for a lot of insects. And so those issues can crop up really quickly this time of year. And so as you're out there watering, as you're out there deadheading or harvesting, that you have an eye on any issues that might be starting, because it's a lot easier to address those issues earlier on than when they become a big deal later.
Now, you mentioned the weather forecast for next week, and it's supposed to be very hot and dry across much of the state of Iowa next week. And I know sometimes we'll have problems with pollination when the heat gets too intense.
Yeah.
Is there anything we should be concerned about next week with our garden plants?
Well, there's not much we can do about it. So, I mean, we could be concerned about it. I guess it's good to know about it, though, because certain plants like peppers come to mind. When it gets really hot, they don't set fruit as well, because sometimes the pollen gets actually like kind of ruined by the heat, and sometimes it doesn't get transferred very well, those kinds of things. There's not much we can do about it, but I think the biggest thing to keep in mind is that plants as it gets hotter, plants will require more water to a certain point, and then they won't. And so it's really easy to accidentally overwater when it gets extremely hot. And so to make sure that even though it's really hot, that you're still checking before you water, that you don't just water blindly. And that's good advice any time of the year, at any situation, but in particularly it's important because when it gets into the hundreds or the upper 90s, we think, oh, these plants need a drink. And you go out there and you water them and you do it every day. And what you're forgetting is that these plants, just like you, are taking a break in the really high heat and aren't maybe using as much water. Now, you could lose a lot of water to evaporation or something like that. But if you have good mulch layer, if you have some shade, those kinds of things, they may not need as much water as you might think. So making sure that you check before you water, even when it's super hot, is really important.
Do you have, of course, all of us try to fit in the gardening and the yard work around our work schedules, whatever schedules they may be. What are your favorite times to get some of these tasks taken care of?
Oh, you know, I would love to say that I get up early in the morning and do it because that would be probably the best time, especially for things like watering, to do it first thing in the morning. But I tend to get a lot of it done in the evening because that's when I'm available. And it is cooler in the evening than it is, say, right when I get home from work. So that's okay. The only thing I have to battle with in the evening, although it's been dry, so it hasn't been as bad, are the mosquitoes.
How about you, Richard? When do you like to get out there?
It's morning. Yeah. It's early morning.
Yeah.
7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. I'm out there.
I always struggle with all of the heavy, heavy dew at that time of day, though. You wind up getting so wet yourself.
I have waterproof shoes.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
You're well prepared. Well prepared. All right. Well, I think we should open up the phone lines and get to some questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And I want to squeeze one in before we get to the break. Evelyn is on the line in Mount Vernon. Hi, Evelyn.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, you touched on it, but I want to make sure. I have the knockout roses, and they bloomed beautifully first part of June, and then I started to deadhead, and then I stopped because I was wondering if they're different than other roses, if I was doing the right thing.
No.
And how far back I should deadhead.
No, you definitely can deadhead the knockout rose, and at Ryman Gardens, we deadhead all of our roses up to about the first part of September. And the only reason we stop the first part of September is that gives enough season for us to let some of the ornamental hips form for the winter. And we just like the look of it. But you could deadhead all season. And we will remove flowers back to the first kind of leaflet of five.
Okay, so where it comes out and the cluster starts, you can take it all the way down to where it's a single.
Yeah.
Them. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're starting to bloom again. And like I said, I was a little leery because I thought I saw some. I know that in the wintertime you don't want to touch them then, you
right.
know, or in the late fall. So,
right.
okay. Okay, yeah. And I probably get a couple more months of blooms out of them then.
Great. Evelyn, yeah, thank you so much for your call. We'll be back to answer more questions in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email question from Robin. I keep coming across a vine that has sort of an arrowhead-shaped leaf. It seems to grow and spread everywhere. Can you tell me what this is?
It could be a bindweed, possibly, like field bindweed. It could be honeyvine milkweed. That's another one. They're both perennials, and they both spread by underground roots, and they're both very difficult to kill. But they can climb things. They're very common. Basically, just repeated digging is one way to try to control those, or using something like Roundup, but it does take repeated efforts.
All right, and what is the danger in having them spread around? What kinds of problems might they cause?
They might climb onto other plants and shade those plants from the sunlight. They're taking water and nutrients from the soil. So they are competition, definitely.
All right. Another email question. This one's from Kevin. I've finally succeeded in keeping the rabbits away from our blackberries. We're going to have a bumper crop this year. Do I cut the vines off after harvesting, or will they reproduce again on these vines next year? When is the best time to prune, and how much?
Now, with blackberries, most blackberries produce the second year. The canes themselves live just 2 years. And most blackberries are strictly vegetative the first year. And then if they survive the winter, they bear fruit the second year. And once they're done bearing, they will slowly die. So once they're done bearing by, let's say, mid to late summer, they should be cut off at ground level, removed from the area, and destroyed.
All right. Let's go to the phones now. Donna is on the line in Webster City. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I was interested in knowing more about how to redo my iris bed. It's bearded iris. It's probably been established about a decade, I'm guessing, and they seem to bloom less and less each year.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest?
Well, I would just dig them up sometime in the next, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks. I would take a sharp knife, like a butcher knife, and I would cut them into sections, divisions. And basically what a plant consists of is a fan of leaves, a single fan of leaves, the rhizome, that thick root-like structure, and the roots. And that's one plant right there. And then once you've basically divided them, then I would cut back the foliage by, let's say, maybe half. And then I would replant. And when you replant, you kind of want to put the same cultivar in a cluster or group. But when you plant those, the rhizome should be just below the soil surface. And typically about maybe 12, 18 inches apart.
Okay. 12, 18 inches apart.
I find it hard to get them planted that way because they constantly want to flop over. And that's part of the reason why we recommend cutting back the foliage. You plant them that shallow that they would tip over if you didn't cut the foliage off.
All right. And will they, knowing it's going to be hot if I do this soon, then I should water these?
You can, but they're pretty resilient. And it doesn't have to be done this week. It could be done, let's say, in early August, mid-August. That's fine, too. Sometime in the next 4 or 5, 6 weeks.
Okay. Is there anything I can do for weed control once the bed's established, like for next spring?
Well, basically,
you don't really mulch them, do you?
Yeah. Well, you can mulch around them, but you shouldn't actually cover them or mulch them directly. I think repeated or regular weeding by hand, pulling, and things like that is the best way to control the weeds.
All right. So you just have to keep up with them.
Right.
All right, Donna, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call. And Steve is on the line next in Clear Lake. Hi, Steve.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a couple of raspberry plants, and one of them is just now 2 years old, and it's producing a bazillion raspberries, but they're all tiny. How can I get it to produce larger raspberries?
Okay, possibly a couple things. What type are they? Are they red, black, purple?
Black.
Okay. One thing possibly would be in the spring, a couple of things you could do. One is to prune out the very small spindly canes because they're not very productive. Okay. Also cut back the side branches. They should be maybe 12 to 18 inches in length. And then go ahead and fertilize in the spring. And I would use a 10-10-10 type product, something that's balanced. And then as the fruit are developing, make sure they have sufficient water. They need at least an inch of water per week, especially when they're developing the actual fruit. If they don't have that water, they tend to be small and kind of dry. So those things would help.
All right, Steve, I hope that works out for you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And next up, Eric in Anamosa. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
What's your question?
I planted a lot of cool season plants like kohlrabi, radishes, broccoli. I've harvested all those, so I got big bare patches in the garden. I'm curious what to plant now.
All right, bare patches in the garden because the spring crops have already been harvested. What can he plant?
Green beans would be a possibility, mm-hmm. definitely on those. Later on, maybe early to mid-August, maybe things like possibly some spinach, possibly.
Lettuce.
Mm-hmm. For a fall crop. Maybe even try some peas for a fall crop, possibly. You might try it.
All right, so some of those spring crops can come around again,
mm-hmm.
but not right now.
You could probably do another round of all those things he mentioned, too, especially things like broccoli and kohlrabi take a little while to get going, and so he could get started on those now in terms of sowing seed and getting them in the ground to have another fall harvest of those coal crops.
All right. And with those, the very high temperatures right now wouldn't affect them?
It won't be the same as the spring one. And a lot of folks that do this actually do start their seed indoors still and then move it out, say, around August. But now would be the time to be thinking about that because they're a little bit longer term than the lettuce and the spinach and the radish.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for your call. Next, Doug in Ronald. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I have a problem with tomato plants. And I have 18 tomato plants, and they're in two rows. But the middle ones are wanting to have some wilt on them, like right across from one another. And you go out one day, and you have some really strong-looking plant, you know, plant life on it. And then you'll have this wilt, and I've sprayed them with fungicide for the, blight. And mm-hmm. then I have sprinkled them with the water can with the Epsom salt. And I've done this, raised these tomatoes like this for years. They're in cages, I use concrete wire.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, the center ones have some wilt on them. And I'm just wondering if it's a creature on there of some sort or what it is.
Well, it may be a vascular wilt, like Verticillium or Fusarium. Those are basically fungal diseases, but they enter the plant through the roots. And so you can't really control them with a fungicide. They enter through the roots, and then they move up into the stem, and they gradually block the flow of water from the roots to the foliage. So the plant typically wilts. And initially, typically it wilts during the heat of the day and then recovers in the evening or at night. But eventually it becomes so severe that the plant wilts, it never recovers, and eventually dies, unfortunately. So when that happens, the only thing you can do is pull the plant and discard it. It is a fungal disease. It does reside in the soil. It tends to be very sporadic as far as what it affects. It may affect one plant over here, a plant maybe at the opposite end of the garden, so it tends to be very sporadic where it occurs.
That seems to be what it's doing.
So, but there's not much you can do. Now, most of the hybrids that you buy at the garden center, as far as tomato cultivars, most hybrids are wilt-resistant. And so when you look at the plant label, they'll have the letters V and F, meaning they're resistant to Verticillium and Fusarium. And so you want to buy resistant varieties, but they're not immune. They can still get it on occasion. So that's all you can basically do with that type of disease.
Okay. There's no way to, you know, prepare the soil before planting or anything?
Nope. No, it's a soil-borne disease. And even rotation doesn't help that much because these pathogens, they can persist in the soil for like 3, 4, 5 years. So rotation doesn't even help that much either, unfortunately.
Because I do rotate my garden.
And that's a good idea.
70,
and that's a good idea.
Long. And I do that, yes. Well, that's what I'll be doing this morning is just going. You want to pull the whole plant or just clip it back?
Well, if the plant is totally collapsed and is beginning to dry up, it's basically dying. And then at that point, I would pull it, I would remove it from the area, and destroy it.
Okay. Well, we'll try that, and thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Doug. The number to call, 866-780-9100. Our email address, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tom is up next in Nevada. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Yes, thanks for taking the call. I have bordered patch caterpillars that are just annihilating the sunflowers. Wondering if there's anything to do, neem oil, diatomaceous earth, anything along those lines to try and fight those back.
Well, I guess I would try some of the BT products if it's a caterpillar. These products basically contain a bacterium that basically is a poison to foliage-feeding caterpillars and harmless to other insects. So I'd probably try one of the BT products. As far as trade names, things like Dipel, Thuricide are trade names of the product.
Okay.
But you can also use, if you want, you can also use a more traditional insecticide like 7. That should work too.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Tom. And picking them off, do you think that would work in this case or big a job?
If they're few in number, yes.
If you can find them.
All right. So bring over the neighborhood 4-year-olds and have them work on it.
Right.
All right. It's almost like Pokemon Go. All right. Next up, we've got Laura on the line in Ames. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a question about, and you may have addressed it here as I was listening, but Verzilium, if that's how you say it. I have 2 apple trees that we recently planted in May, and they just look very sad.
Okay.
So I've tried to do some reading, and the only thing maybe I can tie it back to would be that Verzilium. And I've never had problems. But yeah, what do you think? I've never had problems in my garden other than these 2 trees that look pathetic.
But they're crab apples, correct?
They are not. They're a columnar apple tree.
Apple trees, okay. Now, mm-hmm. Verzilium wilt is a fungus, and it does affect mm-hmm. a wide range of plants. It affects okay. things like tomatoes and peppers, eggplant. It also affects mm-hmm. things like strawberries and raspberries. It affects certain trees and shrubs. But fortunately, mm-hmm. apples and crab apples are resistant to Verzilium wilt. So it should not be that.
Look at that.
It should not be
okay.
that. But it can affect a lot of different trees. For example, maples. They're susceptible mm-hmm. to it. And many trees and shrubs are. So it can affect a wide range of plants. But fortunately, apples, crab apples are resistant. So if you put them in the ground this spring and they look a little bit sad, I'm guessing mm-hmm. it's just kind of transplant-related stress.
Okay.
And just to make sure they're kept well-watered, especially this coming week mm-hmm. when it gets very hot okay. and dry, make sure they're kept watered. Keep on watering if it's dry through the summer and into fall.
Okay. So, well, that's good news for me then. If they just need a little
It should
bit
not be
water.
Verzilium wilt. Nope, it shouldn't be.
Okay. Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Laura. It's good to give some good news every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
Kathleen's on the line next. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I have a question on mulching. I was on Facebook, and someone was showing their flowers in a beautiful garden, and they had done a lot of mulching with grass clippings, and they looked pretty heavy. And I just wondered if grass clippings are indeed okay to use for mulching garden vegetables as well as flowers, if there's any that it should not be used for.
There are a couple of things that I would kind of consider. One is that if you use a broadleaf herbicide, let's say like 2,4-D, and you spray your lawn to control broadleaf weeds, you want to cut the lawn at least twice before you collect and use the clippings, okay?
Yeah, we don't do that. We live on a farm.
Okay. And the other thing is I like to allow the clippings to dry quite a bit before I use them. Otherwise, if you apply them in a thick layer and they're fresh, they tend to get very smelly and they also heat up. And you don't want that. So if you can, allow them to dry first and then use them. And as far as the depth, I typically use like 2 or 3 inches of them.
Okay.
In the garden.
Good. Okay. We have lots of yard, and so I was thinking this would be a lot cheaper. So it's okay for flower beds as well?
Sure. Sure. And the nice thing about the grass clippings is they break down fairly quickly. And oftentimes you can just till what remains in the fall into the soil, and the grass clippings contain quite a bit of nitrogen, so you're fertilizing the actual soil.
All right, nice. Thanks a lot for your call, and let's do an email question before we get to the break. This is from Ben in Des Moines. We have a dying ash tree that we've scheduled for removal in mid-September that has many types of hostas below it. Once gone, the spot will be way too sunny for the hostas. Is it okay to move some hostas now while I can see which ones are the ones I want to keep and which ones I can let go?
You could move them now. I honestly would wait until it cools off a little bit more before I did it, just because it's going to be a lot more work trying to keep them watered and happy this time of year than it will be in September. But you could.
Okay. Maybe flag the ones that you like
want.
Right now.
Yeah. They will scorch with more sunlight, but they're okay. They're fine health-wise, so don't worry about that.
All right. We'll get to your questions in just a moment. We are going to take a short break. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. You can join the conversation by calling 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We are answering your yard and garden questions this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And by we, I don't mean me, but I do mean Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Duran with Iowa State University Extension. And let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100. Here's Lindsay in Des Moines. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
What's your question?
My mom has some volunteer grapevines that are growing in her backyard, and she would like to transplant them and move them to a different area where there are other grapevines that are growing really well. When should she move them, and how should she dig them up or transplant them? She's not in any hurry, but wants
okay.
to know kind of when would be the best time.
How long have they been at their site?
I think last year they started growing at this site. The other area where she wants to move them to, they've been there for a few years and are doing really well.
Okay. So they've only been in the ground for about a year, basically, correct? The reason I say that is that if you have a well-established grapevine that's been in the ground like 4 or 5 years or more, they are basically impossible to transplant. They just don't work. But if
okay.
it was planted recently, then there's a possibility.
And we did not plant them.
Oh, they're like volunteers from...
Yeah, they're volunteers.
Oh, okay. If they're small plants, I would try basically transplanting those early next spring before they leaf out. And I would just dig up the plant with a nice ball of dirt around it and transplant it immediately. If they're really big plants, what you can do is you can actually propagate them by taking off some of the canes and cutting those to 12 to 18 inches in length, doing this in March, putting them in the refrigerator in a plastic bag with some moist peat moss, and then promptly taking those out in April and putting them in the ground. And some of those will root and actually grow. So you could do that too.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, Lindsay, thanks a lot for your call. Next, Whitney in Johnston. Hi, Whitney.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about, we have an organic vegetable farm, and after the first cutting of our alfalfa, we started to notice that we have thrips in our onions, just eating away, and they're pretty much silvery white now. So I'm wondering if there's a couple questions. If there's anything that we can use organically to control that, and then also if you know if that'll affect the storage quality of the onions. They're a little bit reduced in size, but just wondering about storing them.
Okay, now thrips are very, very tiny. They're very hard to see, even with a naked eye. So they are definitely thrips?
Yes.
Okay. As far as organic controls, I'm not sure how effective neem might be. That is definitely organic. You might try that. The other thing you might want to check with our entomology staff here at Iowa State. Their phone number is 515-294-1101. But as far as organic materials, neem is a possibility. I'm not sure how effective it is.
Okay. And then do you think it'll affect us, like storing the onions over winter?
It very well could. They might still be present. So I would see what the entomologists recommend as far as an insecticide.
Okay. They're starting to move into the kale and other brassicas as well.
So stopping them sounds like a good idea. Whitney, thanks a lot for your call. Good luck. Let's go to some email questions now. Next up, we'll have one from Carver in Ames. I had a 3-stem river birch die 2 years ago and had them cut to avoid falling on structures, but left 15-foot stumps with the ambitious plan to build a treehouse on them. I have not built the treehouse, but we've noticed this year that there appears to be a thriving colony of carpenter ants in them. We've also found some of the ants tooling around the house, which is about 15 feet from the tree stumps. We note that the stumps are probably offering a haven for birds, and there are woodpeckers eating off the stumps. I'm accepting that they're not a suitable structure for a treehouse, but I wanted to ask about whether I need to get rid of these stumps because of the carpenter ants. Do they pose a threat to the house?
Well, the carpenter ants basically make their nest in rotting wood. So as far as a house, no. that would assume that some of these actual trunks are rotting. So a tree house, no, absolutely not. The carpenter ants basically might find their way into the house, but usually if you have a water issue. So if you have, for example, a leaking pipe, and the wood next to that pipe is moist, it may begin to rot. And if those carpenter ants run across that area, they may decide to make their home there. Or if you have a window issue where water is getting inside the window and the wood is beginning to rot, again, they like to find these rotting wood areas, and that's where they make their home. So if you don't have any water issue, you probably shouldn't have an issue with the carpenter ants.
All right, so the carpenter ants in the house might be a symptom rather than the actual problem.
Right. If you see carpenter ants during the wintertime, you know they're in the house somewhere because they're active. If they were outside in a tree, you would never see them in the wintertime in the house.
All right. Here's a question from Tom in Ames. Do you have any suggestions for books and or pamphlets that have pictures and descriptions of common Iowa weeds? There are many types of thistles and other plants that I pull out of the garden, and it would be nice to know what to call them.
There is a book, Nebraska Weeds, that's quite good and has color photographs. I think they may have changed the title with the most recent revision. But Nebraska weeds, you can kind of Google that term. Nice color photographs, a nice description. That would be my first choice.
All right. And one more email for now. Art in Edgewood. My tomato plants are doing great, but they're is considerable foliage this year. I read recently that determinate and indeterminate tomatoes should be treated differently regarding the removal of suckers. I keep the labels from my purchased tomato plants, but most of them do not indicate whether the tomato is determinate or indeterminate. Is there any way to tell now, and what are your thoughts on sucker removal with the two types?
Well, if they're determinate, they grow about 3 feet high and they stop. And so if you have a 4 to 5 foot plant, you have an indeterminate tomato.
All right. Yeah. Good sign.
So
determinate ones probably already bloomed, too.
Yeah, they should be blooming and setting fruit. So if they're a big plant, you have indeterminate. As far as removing suckers, it all kind of depends how you train them. Typically, if I grow them in a cage, I don't do anything as far as pruning of the suckers. If you stake them, then typically you would. And you would go out to the indeterminate ones, and you would simply pinch off those suckers. And so you have a single stem, basically, and it keeps on growing throughout the growing season.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100. Jeremy is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. I have a question about oaks. I have a white oak and a red oak. Both are dropping their leaves green in bunches, a little bunch of twigs.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked it up on the internet. I've tried to do as much research as I possibly could, and I can't find anything. I can't figure it out. And the oaks are at different locations, too. So
yeah. So what's likely happening, I have the exact same issue in my backyard with my white oak. What's likely happening is this is a squirrel damage, basically. Especially young squirrels are really rambunctious and prune off a lot of branches that they don't know how to use, basically. They bite them off the edges or ends. Those green tips fall to the ground. In theory, they're using them to build nests and those kinds of things. But especially the young ones, they bite off the ends of these branches and they fall down. Of course, oak trees are great habitat for squirrels. One of their favorites. So there's gonna be quite a few squirrels that live near or in these trees. So it's likely squirrel damage that you're seeing. And there's not much you can do about it. It's pretty hard to control squirrels. How do you keep a squirrel out of a tree, especially if it's anywhere near anything else? I mean, you just can't. So you just kind of live with it. The good news is it doesn't kill the tree. It doesn't really hurt the tree in any big way at all. So it's more of a nuisance than anything.
Just a little cleanup job.
Yeah.
All right, Jeremy, thanks a lot for your call. Brian is on the line next in Indianola. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I have 20 tomato plants, and they are getting the blight for starts at the bottom to up. And I'm wondering if there's any solution and what it will do to my production.
Well, it's going to reduce the production, but they should still go ahead and produce a crop. You really can't do much at this point. It's kind of late. Fungicides prevent the disease more effectively than controlling something. You can pick off the lower leaves as they turn brown, but the more important thing would be for next year. So later on this fall, when the plants die, pull those plants, remove as much of that plant debris as you can from the garden area and destroy it. And then next spring, plant your tomatoes in a different location, ideally where they haven't been grown for 3 years. That's the best that you can do. And when you do plant, make sure that you space them nicely. Good air circulation is good as far as prevention of the disease. And maybe grow them in a cage or stake.
Mulching would help, too.
Right.
All right, Brian. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, Jim in Traer. Hi, Jim.
Yes. In my woods, I got, I don't know if it's a weed or a flower or whatever, but it gets about 12 to 20 inches high. It has 2 to 3 stalks coming out of it, and the leaves are bluish green, kind of like a hosta leaf. And in the springtime, in the center of it, there's a pitcher, kind of like, you know, those insect-eating flowers. And about mid-June, the pitcher dies off, and there's red berries there.
Oh.
What is that?
I think you have Jack in the Pulpit.
That'd be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Are they green now or reddish orange at this point?
I haven't checked them lately, but
okay.
I know they start off green.
Right.
So
mm-hmm. And they usually turn kind of a reddish orange, typically late in the summer. My guess is they're still green at this point. But that's probably Jack in the Pulpit, which is a native woodland plant, typically found in moist, shaded areas. And a very, very unique, distinctive flower. But most people recognize the berries when they turn that bright reddish orange in late summer.
There's, I think, a lot of people out there would love to have this plant in their garden.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's all over it's mm-hmm. old woods. And mm-hmm. This spring was the first time I've ever noticed, like, the pitcher part.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always seen the red berry, you know, orangish red berries, so.
Yeah, the actual flower is very unique. It's kind of a greenish color or maybe kind of a purplish brown. You have this stalk in the center, and then you have this leaf-like structure that kind of curves up and over it. So it looks like Jack in the Pulpit, as far as the actual appearance.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jim, a nice find there. Let's go on to Barney in Manchester. Hi, Barney.
Hi, good morning. My question, we have big white pine trees on our lawn. In the spring, we usually pick up the pine cones, and but throughout the summer, these pine cones keep falling. I'm wondering if it's, do we need to pick them up, or can we just let them deteriorate on the lawn?
Well, as far as on the lawn, they're going to interfere possibly with mowing, but as far as the tree is concerned, it's fine. You can just leave them if you wish.
But will they deteriorate enough? Yeah, I understand when I'm mowing, they get kicked around with the lawnmower.
Right.
But does it have any effect on the grass as far as where the grass will grow or not?
Well, if you have too much debris on the grass, where the grass is basically covered, then that definitely could affect the grass because they need sunlight. So if the grass is completely covered with the needles and the pine cone debris, they're not going to survive very well. But as long as the grass is still visible, it's probably okay.
All right. And maybe the lawnmower will eventually mulch those up. Barney,
right.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. Dennis is up next in Ames. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
What's your question?
Well, a week ago yesterday, we had a lightning strike, and it hit the tree in the front yard. It's an ash tree, and scalped a lot of the bark off the tree. And then the insurance adjuster came and looked at it, and he said that maybe we'd want to wait until next spring to see if the tree would survive. And I guess if my question is, if the tree isn't going to survive, would it be best to take it down now or take it down next spring?
Okay. Well, I think that's probably a good suggestion, waiting till next spring, because you may not know until next year. If it leaves out well next year, then I would assume that the ash tree did survive the lightning strike. But until then, it's hard to really know for sure.
Now he's got an ash tree with a big wound. And
right,
of course,
right.
Emerald ash borer
right.
is a big issue. Is
right.
that a concern?
Well, there's issues coming up, yes, as far as that wound may lead to a wood decay, and eventually the emerald ash borer will arrive. So the future of the tree may be somewhat short, but it may survive the actual lightning strike.
All right. So you may have a couple more good years.
A few more years left, possibly.
All right. Dennis, thank you so much for your call. And let's see if we can fit Kathy in really quickly here. Kathy, do you have a very quick question?
Yes. Some friends are cleaning out their garden. They're throwing it all away, so to speak. And we've got coneflower, sedum, iris, several other perennials that we're going to try to save from certain doom. Any advice? It's not the time of year to transplant, but any advice you guys can give us would be great.
You know, honestly, this time of year, I would probably dig a lot of that stuff up and put it in pots or containers and keep it in a shaded nursery bed until the fall and plant it then. That would probably lead to the best possible outcome in terms of transplanting this time of year.
All right, but it's not a lost cause.
Oh, no. No. It'll be a little bit more work.
All right. Kathy, thanks for your call. Aaron Stile, thank you.
Thank you.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. And I also want to mention, coming up July 30th, we are having a Hort Day celebration, the 30th anniversary of Hort Day. You can find out more information about it on our website at iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.